My name is Joanna Booth. I'm a freelance investigative reporter in Bristol. Journalism is kind of an aside that I started when I started to notice things happening in council meetings and in council papers and decisions that just weren't being written about by the rest of the media. So I felt that someone had to write about these things. So I did.
Okay. So also, I know you are married to Martin, who's also, I mean, he even was going to stand, wasn't he, in one of the local elections. But Bristol 24/7 also has quite an important role in the city now.
Yes, I'm married to Martin Booth, who's editor of Bristol 24/7. I think that makes my life a little harder sometimes, because obviously there's a real conflict in what we report. And I don't believe Bristol 24/7 is that interested in looking at the detailed aspects of how the council is run. I mean, I know they're interested in decisions and news, but we have different angles in a lot of things.
Yeah, it's awkward, isn't it? Because you would hope in a free society, in a democratic society, that there would be space for pretty much any writer to get their stuff up, so long as it was legal. And I guess there is a political pressure on stories, but then there's also the lawyers saying, oh, we mustn't touch this. Well, sometimes newspapers, blogs, and even television need to be able to stick their neck out a bit.
Oh, yeah, I completely agree. And there's a lot of pressure. I know that the administration have criticised journalists for all sorts of things. You know, I blame them for Impress is one of the regulatory bodies. Then there's Ipsos? I know that Adam Postance has been complained about. I know that the council have complained about other journalists. Yeah. And so if anything I say, at times also my husband gets attacked for it.
These local democracy reporters play, I think, a really important role these days, and yes, they seem to be the ones who are getting it in the neck from the mayor, don't they?
Yes, they do. I mean, finally, I was glad to see a Bristol Post headline calling the mayor a bully, because he has spent so much time, even before that was 2 years ago, I believe, or 2019 November, when he bullied Adam Postance in the chamber. But there's been, you know, the abuse is constant. The abuse is constant for journalists. And we saw it last year, last June, when the LDRs weren't only banned from the press briefings, but then all these types of stories started coming out about them from the mayor's office, saying that Reach is really an ad click commercial advertiser and the LDRs are biased, etc. Just as, because Alex Seabrook questioned why the mayor flew to Canada to give a 14-minute speech on how to solve climate change, things like that.
Yeah. Well, it seems that a lot of our public money seems to be being spent on shooting messengers. But anyway, we want to have a look actually at some of the looks like conflict of interest going on, particularly with Marvin Rees, the mayor, and his deputy Asher Craig. But starting with Marvin, I notice in Private Eye that they are talking about some conflict of interest at one of the boxing clubs.
That's right. So in last March, a year ago now, the mayor's administration handed over a piece of land that Empire Fighting Chance had been leasing for 35 years off the council to the club for 999 years for nil premium, which means they paid nothing for it. Now, this land transfer was deemed to be okay because they were then to build affordable housing on it. But what the mayor didn't do was declare that he was a member of the club, had been since 2017. Before 2017, he had been a director of that club as a mayor, and he is also an ambassador for it. You know, the day before the meeting, he actually did, there was actually a coverage in the Bristol Post about how he was an ambassador and how he was helping the club. So it's the declaration, really, that's the problem, because if there is deemed to be a conflict of interest in any decision-making in the council, that decision can be nullified. It can be taken to court. A judicial review can come up and say, look, the council, there's an apparent bias here.
The attitude is, well, maybe we'll get away with it.
Well, maybe. I put in a complaint to the council, to the monitoring office, to say that there was no declaration about the mayor's interest in this decision. And I was told that the monitoring officer, Tim O'Gara, had discussed it with the mayor beforehand, and that Tim O'Gara had decided there was no conflict of interest at all. So
So this is specifically what the monitoring officer told me, that, and this was through Nancy Rollison, who is the head of legal services, that they had deemed there was no conflict of interest at all. So I said, well, regardless of that, there was nothing in his register to say that he was involved with it, which is a problem because, I mean, the very reason we have registers of interest, apart from the fact that they're illegal, that we have to legally have them, is that so we can know that our leaders, as such, are making decisions with our best interests in mind and not their own ones or their friends.
So as the mayor's political opposition, and there is enough of it out there, particularly amongst the 70 councillors and Labour councillors becoming less and less all the time of those, yeah. Has any opposition amongst those politicians?
In relation to this decision?
Yeah.
I've not heard anything. I've not really heard anything. I've not seen anyone else bring it up. No. I covered it in October.
Yeah, not so far. What about the Mayor Marvin Rees's deputy Asha Craig? Because she is also, there are questions also about her taking over some sort of organisation. Now, she, as an elected representative here in Bristol, as a councillor, it does seem a little bit peculiar if the Mayor is handing contracts to her as one of his cabinet members.
Yes, that's right. So Asha Craig has been in charge of this program called Stepping Up. She actually initiated it in Bristol City Council as a way of giving people who may be facing structural racism in the city, giving them a hand up to find positions in places like Hargreaves, Lansdowne, you know, lots of places. It's leadership and confidence building, and there's a course attached to it.
Okay, so these are the big businesses in the city. Hargreaves Lansdowne, people don't know, is a massive broker for people's investments, which has actually come under a lot of criticism in the past for basically just losing people's money or advising them to put their money into places where the money has then just disappeared. I mean, the idea of an organisation like this that Asha has set up is simply to, you know, give black and ethnic minority people, you know, more of a chance to figure in the city's kind of ruling organisations, the big businesses in the city.
Yes. I mean, the idea of it is a great idea, and I'm glad that the council is doing it, and I hope we can include more groups like the groups, you know, with disabilities and maybe single parents or anyone who's facing some kind of injustice. But the problem is that the council now have handed this project to be run by Asha's company, Stepping Up Leadership CIC. So she directly benefits from this £58,000 contract for a project she is currently supervising as a cabinet member. Her role there is to supervise it. So, and that hasn't been disclosed at all in her register of interest. And this is a direct disclosable pecuniary interest. She makes money from any decisions that affect this project effectively.
In both these instances, it does seem that we're kind of going down a slippery slope to where we've got an administration at the mayor's office at the moment where it's dishing out public money to its friends.
Well, we don't seem to have much of a check and scrutiny on these. Where are they doing this? I mean, that's the question that we need to be asking. How is the process being handled? Who is checking, you know, how these assets are being disposed of? And in the next, over the next year, the council has programmed in a £3.5 million disposal of its assets. So there's going to be a lot of opportunities here for us in scrutiny positions as journalists, and those in the council with a legal responsibility to protect our city and our assets to actually make note. This is the beginning of things that we're noticing, but there's going to be a huge, huge drive to dispose of as many assets as the council can.
There's nothing new about this, really, because I remember George Ferguson, he sold off the final council claim on the freehold to Bristol Port, didn't he, for an exorbitant price or two.
That's right. That's right. He did the freehold of the port. So the lease had been given away in back in Labour days, and the freehold was finally sold off by George Ferguson when he was in power. And to be fair, he's actually sold it off for money. So that's something. I'm not saying he should have, but and on that decision on the port freehold sale, I believe there was also no calling allowed. So so councillors couldn't question it, but I don't know about that. I'd have to check. But other things like the reference part of the library, of the central library, was also given to cathedral schools. You know, that was a 250-year lease, I believe, or 125, but anyway, beyond our lifetime.
Well, I mean, it's almost as if the family silver isn't being sold off, it's being given away to the mayor's mates.
This very much. Well, yes, I mean, this is the kind of thing we need to be questioning. Where are the processes to check what is being given away and whether it is in the best value of Bristol? I mean, part of it is asking also, why are we disposing of so many assets? Yesterday at the budget, there was an amendment in to ask for more money for Jubilee Pool, which had been a council property paid for by council taxpayers. You know, it was something owned by the city and its people, and then was transferred over as a community asset transfer, but now they're running into difficulties because the building is run down and they don't have much money, and it's all fundraising. So it's very much paying double for property that we already own, and the people now are in danger of losing their pool in an area which has very few amenities.
Yeah, it's almost like the whole thing is being run down. Finally, yes. We've had a pretty shocking decision made by the City Council early this year, I mean in January, about the Bristol Harbour. So there was a discussion.
Sorry?
There was a debate at the City Council about rents and making sure that the council ensured fair rents, even though actually they don't have any power to do that. But literally the next week, a decision was announced to increase the mooring fees for those living in the harbour by something like 200% and even some up to 300%. So it's almost as if they're making fun of the viewers, the listeners, the people in the city, and particularly those who are actually living in the harbour. And yet they seem happy for people to come and sort of leave their luxury yachts and, you know, the super rich to leave their boats there, like somewhere like Portishead, so long as they're willing to pay, you know, through the nose to leave their boats there, they're happy. But for people to live in the harbour seems to be impossible. In fact, many people may actually lose their homes as a result of this. So what do you make of this bizarre, you know, fair rents discussion and debate where Tom Renard, the housing guy on the cabinet, is championing the cause of fair rents, and then multiplying the rents of the mooring fee people by up to 300%. I mean, it just sounds like the most unbelievable hypocrisy. And also, of course, it could change completely the character of the harbour.
Yes, I mean, you brought up two very, very important points. One, they are going to affect the quality of the harbour. They already started with the harbour festival criticisms last year. I mean, they've set up this harbour festival to be, you know, overpriced food and lots of drink into an unpleasant place. They called it, you know, they started back then calling the boat dwellers basically white middle class racists. This kind of it was quite a derogatory. They really brought out this white racism part. So now, how many months ahead, you know, 8 months later, they're effectively going to make people homeless who had already had approval for staying, for mooring in the harbour. And they're trying to bring in some kind of incentive for luxury living. It's a very strange, very, very strange process they're going through.
Well, some would call it social cleansing. I mean, basically, this is a way of getting rid of the poor, and they don't care where they live, and they actually would even be prepared to evict them from their boats, sell those boats, and so they've got nowhere to live anymore.
Oh, it's horrible, isn't it? It's really awful. It's really awful that these people have, you know, that live on the boats, because a lot of the times they can't afford houses, and they're about to be made homeless in a city with a 19,000 long housing waiting list. But really, I mean, if you look at what's been happening in the harbour for over the last 4 or 5 years, the council have poured over £3 million into trying to fix things, into trying to do reviews, into trying to profit from it. So when Penny Fell, who was the previous director of commercialization, came in about 3 years ago, she promised that she would make £250,000 profit in the first year just from doing things like creating a database of expertise because everyone was siloed. In the end, she sidled away, you know, in summer 2 years ago because she had failed to achieve anything. She hadn't even, she was meant to deliver a harbor review to see how the harbor could work or where things were going wrong. And she didn't do that. They had to outsource it to another company. And we paid £130,000 for it. And no one's seen that harbor review yet. So all these new ideas the administration is coming out with about, you know, basically what you said, social cleansing, getting rid of boat dwellers who last year they demonized as white racist middle class people, perhaps are coming from this harbor review that we can't see. So why can't we see it? Why can't we see what they have done over the years, what they have achieved with all the money they've spent? And it has been about £3 million since 2018. And where are these decisions coming from? What evidence do they have for them? It's quite a cruel thing to do to the area, and especially coming up with the changes at Cumberland Basin with what they've renamed as Western Harbour. There seems to be a whole type of gentrification they are attempting in this area, including the city centre too. You know, there's a whole program being established of how they want the area to look, and it doesn't take account the residents, either of the boat, you know, the boat dwellers, or the residents of Harbourside and Hotwells.
Well, of course, this harbour is actually what makes the city, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, of course. I mean, that's our heritage, isn't it? There's, you know, not always a good heritage. And instead of using that as a point of humility and of trying to acknowledge, you know, the reality of Bristol, they hide that part away. And instead of focusing on not promoting luxury boatism, I don't even know. I find it curious how it's so definite in its actions, you know, overcharge people for living there, get rid of them. It is basically social cleansing, and promote a different type of use without consulting residents at all.
Well, this is maybe the most perverse thing about this is that it was announced last year there was going to be a consultation about changes in the harbour. The 100 or so people who actually live all, you know, live on boats in the harbour were then told at the end of January, well, we forget the consultation. We're just going to do this anyway.
Oh, yeah. Yes, there's been no real consultation at all. There's been nothing. I don't understand how they can just change things.
Well, I mean, it seems to me that you've got some very bizarre legal advice going on, or else maybe they're just thinking, well, we can do this, and if these boat people want to do something, they've hardly got any money, they'll have to raise a load of money to fight us in the courts now that legal aid is gone.
Oh, yes, of course. What I'm very interested in, though, is the different statements we've been hearing about what people have been told they can do from the Harbour Master and the Harbour Master Office. And then what the council have been telling them to do. So, for example, that was the boathouse. I think it was last year or the year before during that pandemic. And people started building their house, you know, moored near the M shed, and were told they could do this, apparently, by the harbour master. And then the council wanted to charge them, it was a huge amount. It was something like £200,000. It was a huge campaign covering it. But there seemed to be two different points of authority, and only one of them has actual authority. But the harbour master seems to be telling people they can do something, and then the council tells them they can't. So who's running what?
That's a good question. That's our job to figure this out, isn't it? Anyway, look, Joe, how do people follow your blog, and what's the best way to follow your journalism in Bristol?
Yeah, sorry. So my blog is it's a Substack now. It's I tell people to go to joannab.substack.com, and you can sign up, and it's free. And anytime I post something new, you'll be able to get it from there. And if you don't want to subscribe, you can still go to joannab.substack.com and read all the previous articles.
And you're a bit of a tweeter too, aren't you?
I am. You can find me at stillawake at twitter.com.
Okay, Joanna Booth, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Tony.